Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
Rail transit connections between airports and city centers have become increasingly common and heavily used around the world in recent decades. Particularly high-profile link is now being constructed in Washington, D.C. area, a 23-mile extension of existing Metro Rail system which will connect East Falls Church, Virginia to Washington Dulles International Airport.
It will serve the major employment areas of Tysons Corner, Reston, and Herndon, Virginia, and of course it will connect into the 106-mile Washington Metro network to provide transit accessibility across the region. Talking with us about this important venture today is Sam Carnaggio, Project Director for the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority, who is leading the extension project. We're real glad to have you with us today, Sam.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the need for this project? What's the underlying market demand, and maybe give us some insights into Dulles Airport as a part of the regional airport system?
Well, with regards to Virginia, there's two big economic centers that the government likes to tout. One is, of course, down in Newport News, Virginia, the port itself, but the other is Dulles Airport. And a lot of passenger service, a lot of commercial service comes through Dulles Airport. Dulles was built back in the 60s. It was at that time built out in what you might call the country. And it's population has grown since then, has grown out towards Dulles. But we've never had a rail link there. It's time for it to occur, and the government came up with this project to get out there. It should be noted that there's always been a reservation of a roadway, a median, in a highway with rail in mind, even from the very beginning. So a lot of credit has to go to those people who picked that location. And this is an opportunity. There's a lot of Fortune 500 companies along this corridor, and they're looking for this to really expand the economy in Northern Virginia.
How are travelers getting to and from the airport now?
Oh, of course, a lot have to use automobile. There's a number of buses that have been chartered either from the county itself coming into the city or from the city going back out to the county. For the most part, the rail seems to be the right answer, both not only for passengers, but also for employees in the corridor.
And you mentioned that in the original design, there was this reserved spot in the meeting of the highway all the way back in the 60s when it was done. Why has it taken until now for something to be built to use that space?
I just think that there's been other needs that the Commonwealth of Virginia has looked at, and to be honest with you, they had to focus on completing the metro system itself. It's a 103-mile system. It wasn't it wasn't completed until the late 90s. In the early right about 2000, they did complete a 3.5-mile extension in Maryland, at that time, Virginia had come up with the idea of possibly extending it, got serious about it, got enough people interested to make an investment, because after the original makeup of the metro system in this area was developed, the jurisdiction through which a extension is made has to put up the majority of the money, and that's the situation we're in now. The Northern Virginia has finally decided it's worth the investment to make this extension at this time, and even though the thoughts have been there, they've finally gotten people to come to the table and put the money up to extend rail.
So, but this is, as you just described it, not a facility that does not only serve the airport. Has it served some of the major employers along the way?
It's again, the metro system for the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area is almost like a spider web, the way that it goes out. It was originally conceived as a 103-mile system, and there's a lot of access there. By doing this extension, and it's a 23-mile extension that comes off of what we might call one of the webs, not only does it give the rest of the metropolitan area access to Northern Virginia, but it gives Northern Virginians access to that 103-mile system. So it's good both for the metropolitan area and it's good for Northern Virginia.
So how many stations are you building between the two endpoints?
Well, the 23-mile extension will have 11 different stations. We're building it in two phases. The first phase has 5. The second phase has 6, of which one of them is at the airport itself.
So when you say you're phasing the stations, are you phasing them starting at one end going to the other, or putting in some and then filling in between?
No, it's a geographical split. The first part is going to be 11.5 miles out. That's what's under construction now, and approximately 33% complete at this time, construction-wise.
And is it, for the most part, elevated surface tunnel? Is it a combination? What's the design of the rail?
Well, it really is a combination. It starts off, and again, we use the term extension, and I'd like to expand on that a little bit. It's actually a branch. An extension would come off the end of a rail line. This actually comes off of the middle of a rail line, which actually makes for a very much more difficult situation because you have an operating railroad and you can only work on it at limited time. So, and I will talk about risks later, but that is one of the biggest challenges. We come off with the terminology I'll use is a flyover. We go across a highway, then come down in the median of a highway. After that, we go for about 5 miles and then branch off into a metropolitan area called Tyson's Corner, Virginia. And we've wind back through Tyson's Corner, and then we go underground for 3/8 of a mile. That's we start off aerial through Tyson's Corner, then we go 3/8 of a mile underground, and then we come out and go aerial again and do another flyover and get back on to the median of the highway and extend out for another 6 miles out to our first terminus point, what we call a temporary terminus point.
So this design allows you to serve the businesses in Tyson's Corners, if I understand.
Well, to be very honest with you, the reason was to not only to serve the businesses, spur economy at the 4 different stations that we have through Tyson's Corner, and also to get the passengers. This project is funded through the Federal Transit Administration, and under their New Starts program, there's a certain requirement to get a certain number of passengers. And we had to make that investment in the stations in the area where we would get the most people on board. And so this methodology, this route was chosen. And I might say, I've been on board since 2004. It was chosen back in 2000 before I had been here. But the planners thought that this was the best way to achieve that ridership.
And you mentioned that because you're creating a branch off an existing working rail line, that there's limited times that you can work. What are the work hours that you're able to use? Are you working in the middle of the night?
Well, actually, we can't even work every night. It's mostly on weekends when we can have some shutdowns and maybe single track through that area. But when we are going to make the critical connections, we actually have to shut down the rail line for a weekend. And we have to work with the what's called WMATA, the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. When we work with that metro system, we have to set up for a track outage probably 30 days ahead of time to allow enough time to tell the community and also allow their forces to be able to make alternate plans. Usually, for those of us in the transit business, the terminology we use is using bus bridges to allow people to get around these particular areas when rail's not operating.
And have these interruptions necessitated you working extra hard to sell the public on the project so that they tolerate the upset?
The public has been great. We've got a super outreach program. We're constantly putting out flyers. We've got a network of, I'm not that modern to be able to talk about the Twitter program, but we've got outreach in every area constantly, on a daily basis. We're talking to different communities, and the public has been very, very acceptable of some of the outages that we've had to put in.
So, as I recall, the Tyson's design was a controversial design. I think there were questions about whether to go elevated or go into a tunnel. Am I remembering correctly? And if so, how was that resolved?
Well, controversial is a term. I was here during that period. What basically happened was that some of the people thought that it would be good to have a tunnel through Tyson's and not have it disturbed, because we have a neighboring area through which they tunneled under, a community, and that has worked extremely well for the metro system. Unfortunately, out here, as I mentioned, the Federal Transit Administration has this requirement for new starts. And for certain costs, you have to have certain ridership. Our projected ridership only allowed us to invest a certain amount of money in the project. And if we, in fact, had built a tunnel, and we wanted to build a tunnel, I will tell you from the project side, and as a person who's had to deal with it, I would have much preferred a tunnel. But the cost would have gone up another $800 to $900 million. And we would have busted what FTA calls the cost-effectiveness ratio, and in which case we would have lost $900 million of federal money. So basically we couldn't afford it because of the regulations that the Federal Transit Administration had in effect at the time.
So I think that's an important lesson for us to learn from you and from your experience, and that is that when we make investments like this, we do pay attention to, and we have to pay attention to, the balance between the costs and the benefits.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You certainly have to look at the effect of it. On the other hand, though, if I could be the devil's advocate on that, there are a number of terrific infrastructure projects that have, over time, you'd have to wonder why would we have ever questioned the cost of it. As an example, the metro system itself in the Washington, D.C. area, extremely costly operation, but we could never imagine Washington, D.C. operating without the current metro. But you need some people, and again, I'm an engineer, and part of my job is to throw cold water on planners' ideas, but you do need people who have that kind of vision and foresight to be able to see something that'll stand the test of time.
Are there any green elements that have been put into the design?
I not anything that I would say that would be on the cutting edge. Okay, we've made some good common sense decisions. I think that our system, especially our aerial structures, look extremely sharp. We've gone from what was originally proposed as some ASHTO box girders that is used throughout the rest of the metro system to a precast segment that are put in by trusses, and it's very impressive to see these in, and they have excellent looking lines. Aesthetically, I think it's a terrific project that we're building, and personally, this is my pride, but I think it's going to look much better than many of the other extensions that we have out there.
So when you say you're describing these precast segments, it sounds to me like it's a segmental design.
It is the aerial structure is, and we'll build 8 to 10 segments between columns, and then come back and post tension them, and it's gone extremely well. And they are manufactured. Actually, we've set up a plant at the airport to manufacture these.
So, and you can truck them to the job site.
Exactly. And they weigh anywhere from 4 to 8 tons each. So that's a substantial amount of weight to get these units in place and to lock them in with the post-tensioning.
It's an interesting design. I'm curious, with a segmental design, I wonder, are you able to get some smooth curved segments in there?
Well, actually, not an extreme curve on it, but we are able to obviously to come around at 90 degrees, it's, you'll have quite an arc on it and everything, but it's very impressive to see, and it's very impressive the operation we've got. And I think we're the only transit project in the United States, certainly, that has three trusses operating on it at the same time.
And the trusses are used to support the segments until the post-tensioning goes into place.
That's exactly right.
How's the system interface at the airport terminal?
Well, that is in the second phase of the project, and that is a little bit of a controversy, if you want to use that term right now. Preliminary cost estimates came in for the first segment, second phase, and it's proposed to be design build. So the design isn't as complete as you would have on a design bid build, but the cost came in, probably 20% higher than the area that we were looking at, anywhere from $3.2 to $3.8 billion. The first phase, by the way, is costing $2.7 billion. So it's a substantial increase in the cost, even though the length is about the same. Now, there are some differing elements. One is that we're going to have a new yard that we're putting in for the Airports Authority, and another is that we have four parking garages. I should have mentioned that before. In the downtown Tysons Corner Center, we have no parking at the stations. And the reason is that Fairfax County, in which this is being constructed, wants the Tysons Corner area to be a walkable community. But back to the airport, the cost, obviously, much higher than what we want. So they're considering either going with the locally preferred alternative, which was developed in the early, 2002, which has a tunnel going in front of the airport, or going further out from the airport with an aerial structure, but people would have to walk an additional 600 feet to get to the terminal. And that's the trade-off that they're looking at right now. If they can save $400 to $500 million, is it worth it to have the station located further out and just have the people walk to that distance? And so they're looking at other ways to mitigate that. If they have it, the aerial station, out further, could they have moving sidewalks and other facilities to be able to accommodate people? That's a tough decision because, again, this is a long-term investment. We're probably looking out, again, as a visionary, maybe 75 years, because this is going to be there for at least that amount of time. And what's the best way to accommodate the people that are coming to the airport?
So you're talking about a little bit under half a billion dollars, $400 million for 600 feet?
Yes.
But the point is a really interesting one, because I do have the ability to think ahead and imagine what somebody 25 or 30 years downstream after it's open might say about why didn't you make this connection and make it really truly seamless. We see that in a lot of cities where the rail transit goes to the airport, but it really doesn't go to the airport, and there's a gap that has to be filled by some other technology.
My personal experience in the late 90s was that I was the deputy administrator in Baltimore for the Maryland Transit Administration, and we extended the light rail at that time to what was at that time called BWI, Baltimore Washington International Airport, and we brought the light rail in on the, the east end of the airport, and even though it actually comes in and goes under part of the airport, so the people are protected from the weather, for the people at the other end of the terminal, it's still quite a walk when they get in there, and that's still debated. So I think you're right. I think you have to look long-term to see the effect of that. However, at the same time, in this area, the people that are paying for this, and there's a huge pressure with regards to infrastructure costs right now to keep them down, we've got people that are pushing each way. On the other hand, we've got people who are environmentalists that say, Some people want it further out and let the people walk. Other people want that access right to the airport. So it's a debate that's going on. Our board is heavily involved with it. I think that it's hopefully we're going to have people who will make a solid decision. It just won't be a political decision because, as we all know, those are sort of short-term decisions.
Are you in your position in a position to advocate for one way or the other, or do you just sort of watch the process and execute the way it comes out?
Well, our team here, we get the best information we can, and we share it. But we, for the most part, we're in a situation as an authority where we have to share it with our board, justify, show the pluses and minuses on each side. And our board, along with our partners, we still have the transit agency. We're not the, as in most cases, where the transit agency builds it. We are building it for a transit agency. So the transit agency gets input on it. We get input on it. The Commonwealth gets input on it. And we have two counties, Fairfax and Loudoun County, that have input on it, and they're also funding partners. So there's a lot of people that have a say-so, and unfortunately it tends to get political at times, but hopefully they'll make the best decision on it. Again, this is, and I know it's not the best thing for a construction project, but this is a democratic process, basically, that they're going through.
And when you say it gets political, what are the politics of it?
Well, the politics are that some people are advocating that we're going to do the best we can to minimize the cost on infrastructure, and they're not looking out in the future the way we are. Again, that's what I use the terminology being short-term, achieving that cost as opposed to looking long-term, the convenience for the passengers over the next 50 to 75 years. And some people will sell that concept that, hey, I'm keeping the cost down. I'm more of a better manager of finances. I'm looking out for you because I'm keeping the cost down. That's what I mean by the political aspects of it.
Yeah. How's the project being financed?
The first phase, I think I told you that the federal government has put up $900 million, and basically we have a toll road here that's paying for perhaps 50%, and the rest of it is coming through a contribution from the Airports Authority, from Fairfax County, and from Loudoun County. Those are the two counties that I was mentioning that the rail runs through. The second phase right now, we don't have any federal money. So the split up basically will be mostly between the toll road and the two counties. And the toll roads, even though the Airports Authority controls the toll road right now, the counties are arguing that it's their citizens that are riding on the toll road and contributing to it, and so they almost have a double tax there. And that, again, gets into the political aspects of it.
So is it, when you say there's no federal involvement in the second phase, does that mean there won't be or there isn't yet?
There isn't yet. Now, one is that we're looking at what's called a TIFIA loan. Are you familiar with those?
Some of us are. Why don't you explain it for the rest of us?
That's a loan that comes through the U.S. Department of Transportation, usually a low-cost loan for a worthy transportation project. You have to put application in for it, and we have put our initial application in for that. And hopefully we can get anywhere from $600 to $900 million dollars there. Also, there is the transit program that I spoke about before. However, again, I mentioned that under the FTA's New Starts program, you need a certain amount of ridership. We do not think that the ridership for the second phase of this project will be as high as we've already used for the first phase. So unless they loosen some of those requirements there, it might be extremely difficult just getting an out-and-out grant from under the Federal Transit Administration's New Starts program.
But the TIFIA is a loan, so what would be the plan for paying back the loan?
Well, we'd have to work that out with the counties and the airport's bonding of the toll road.
But you could stretch the payback over a longer period of time, presumably.
Yes.
I think one of the interesting issues on large infrastructure projects like this is that it's very tempting to look at to look at the construction costs as current costs, but fundamentally it's an investment, and which would presumably last, as you suggest, you know, a very long time, 75 years or better, and so it's not unreasonable to expect the payback would come over that period of time. But I think it's really tempting, particularly when budget pressures are tight, to say, well, we're spending all that money and it's going out the door right now, and you lose sight of the benefits.
Well, that's true, but the history in this area is that the Dulles Toll Road, which we inherited when the Airports Authority took over the project, they also took over the Dulles Toll Road to pay for it from the Commonwealth. The history of the Dulles Toll Road is, for the first 20 years, the tolls stayed very low. On some of the entrances, a quarter or 50 cents. And already, over the 5 years or so that the Airports Authority has been here, since the project started, the tolls have gone up like three times already. So people see that in the previous period, when they weren't having any construction, that the tolls were low, almost non-existent compared to the GNP of the area, and now they seem to be going up dramatically and projected to go up much higher. So that's a concern for the people in the area. To be honest with you, compared with other toll roads, it's still a relative bargain to be able to go down the Dulles Toll Road.
But does the Airport Authority operate the toll road, or is that a different entity?
So the Airports Authority now does. Since 2007, they've been operating the toll road.
So just to be clear, and so I can book my ticket, what's the earliest I could expect to ride into downtown D.C. on Metro from Dulles Airport?
Let me put it the opposite way. I wouldn't book it before 2017.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to try really hard to wait that long. What do the forecasts look like in terms of ridership on a typical weekday?
Well, right now the projections are probably close to, I'd say, roughly 85,000 weekday riders.
And ultimately, what fraction of those are likely to be airport riders?
Well, it's hard to say. A lot of times we put these projections out there for airports, but the projections that we give are not just for passengers. You know, the airport employs a lot of people, and to be honest with you, a lot of people are employees at the airport. I don't think we've broken it down as such, but I'd be extremely happy if 10% of them were airport passengers.
And I suppose one of the issues there, and which we have here in Chicago, is a lot of airport users are charging their trip off to somebody else, so it might be convenient or relatively cost-free for them to use a taxi as opposed to using public transit. But the workers, the employees, are likely to be transit users, I would think.
I would think so also. And keep in mind, just by the, and I don't know how well you're familiar with this area or how well I've explained it, but Dulles Airport is quite a ways off from Washington, D.C., and that metropolitan area where you might have more workers that would like to have that access out there. And I agree with you. There's a lot of people in D.C. who don't have automobiles who use transit. So the opportunity to get to an airport that might have jobs where they could fill the needs, I think presents a very, very interesting opportunity. As a matter of fact, there might be a number of people who are currently working at National Airport, which is served by Metro, to be able to work at Dulles Airport now if they had that ability.
Oh, interesting possibility of a switch there. What's your vision of how Dulles Airport will be different, let's say, 5 years after this line, the connection opens? Do you think it's going to make a difference for the airport itself?
Well, for I think that you're going to have more people going into this facility. I think not only the airport, they do have a capital program that they've got planned at this time. I do think that they're going to have people who, a lot of people, and again, this gets into the airport side of the business, who are using National right now, who are going to be able to take advantage of Dulles Airport. A lot of people go to, I don't know if you know the program with regards to slots, and it's the number of planes that can leave National Airport and go across the nation to like the West Coast. And it's limited. There's a program that limits the number of planes that can do that. And to be honest with you, some of the legislators in Congress are pushing for that number to be able to be increased at National Airport. This will take a little bit of that away because they'll be able to get at the Dulles Airport. The runways are much longer, if you don't know, at Dulles Airport than at National Airport. And so I think we're going to have more people from Capitol Hill that'll take advantage of that. And so I guess we'll have higher profile people, if you want to call it that, that have access to Dulles Airport. I think it's going to be a tremendous boon for the airport. I think they'll complement one another very well. I think you'll have more people coming from the outside coming into Dulles Airport, knowing that they'll be able to use the Metro not only to get to downtown, but to get to other areas in Northern Virginia. Northern Virginia, along this particular stretch that I'm talking about, Dulles Toll Road, there's just a tremendous number of Fortune 500 companies that have already staked out property along this corridor. You've heard of SAIC. It's like Booz Allen. These are some big think tank operations, big contractors for the government. And they already, SAIC has moved their headquarters from San Diego to a spot along this corridor already, just in anticipation of the line starting out here.
There's a lot of big defense contractors out there from what I've seen in the signs.
Okay.
Very interesting project, very exciting project. As a person who flies in and out of Washington, D.C., more than I'd like to, I'm looking forward to your completing it so that it gives me the option of using Dulles Airport and still relying on a really good public transit system.
Can I add one more point,
please,
for you, since you are talking about infrastructure? We did build this tunnel through Tyson's Corner, and it comes up in a bit of a hill in Tyson's Corner, and we built this 3/8 of a mile long tunnel through there, a Natom tunnel, through a, wouldn't say completely soft, but relatively soft geological area. Went extremely well. One of the best projects that tunneling people have come from across the country just to take a look at this project. And in some areas, the cover over the tunnel has gone down to as little as 8 feet, and still the tunnel was expertly built and turned out extremely well, extremely well.
It sounds really interesting. We'll put it on our list of targets, and maybe we'll come back to you and talk about that in more detail in a future show.
We'd love to have you come down and visit us, really.
You're on my list. I'm going to be in touch with you. Sam, thank you so much for giving us these great insights into what looks like a very exciting project that I'm looking forward to using. I appreciate your talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.